everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gigax, and today we're going to play a game that is called Are You Smarter Than an FNG? That is Foxtrot November Golf. And if you're not already familiar with that abbreviation, it stands for fucking new guy. So I spent many years as an on-the-job instructor and a career academy instructor, and there's tons of material that we cover during that period. And after that, there's no follow-up, which is the entire reason that this podcast was created. And so I always had it in the back of my mind that one day I should actually go through this checklist and make sure you guys know all the stuff that you were supposed to know when you first started working. And that's what we're going to do today. So in the on-the-job instruction booklet, there is a checklist at the back of 102 items. And you have to sign off on all 102 of those items in order for your training to be complete. As a trainer, my job was to go through those items with you, make sure you understood every single one of them. So we're going to do that now. And we'll go through each of these one by one, and we'll talk about them a little bit. A lot of them will just be experience, like have you done such and such thing, and presumably all of you will have done it. But if it's uncommon, I'm going to talk about it. So we're going to start right out here with skill number one, record work hours using the facility's time recording procedures. So this would be your scanner. Now, it used to be the barcode reader or the electronic badge reader. Now we use the scanner, and of course you go into option T, time clock, and record your hours. If you aren't able to use the scanner for some reason, then you're going to want to use a form 1260, the paper time card, and put your times in on there. I'm going to give you guys a pro tip on this. My badge has gotten water damage. The barcode has become unreadable. So what a lot of people do is they take a picture of their badge, keep that picture on their phone, and then you can just scan the barcode on your phone. But I found even better than that is in my Google Wallet, there is a way to add a barcode. And I'm sure Apple Pay has the same thing. So I took a picture of my badge in Google Wallet, and now I can just go into my Google Wallet, tap USPS ID, and the barcode comes up in a format that's intended to be easily scannable. So that is number one. Number two, record work hours such as begin and end tour. Obviously, you have to clock in and clock out every single day. Number three, record work hours to properly document current function or assignment. So this is something that if you haven't done it in a while, you can kind of forget that, like, we all know, or we should all know, that we have two basic operations that we're going to do every day. We have office time, which is operation 722, and we have street time, which is operation 721. And then for me as a union steward, if I'm doing union work, I'm going to go into operation 613. Every time I change jobs, I have to go into the scanner, go into time clock, scan my badge, and then switch to the different operation number. And you guys are going to be doing the same thing. That also needs to be done whenever you change routes. If you're doing auxiliary assistance on somebody else's route, then you're going to go into your scanner, go into time clock, change the route number, and then clock to street or office as appropriate on the new route. Every time you change jobs, this has to be done. I just had a grievance not too long ago at my station where management was having CCAs throw parcels. And the more I learn, the more I find that, yeah, that actually is a grievance. But what I wound up grieving is that they weren't, crossing crafts is a grievance. But anyway, what I wound up grieving was that they weren't having the CCAs move to the appropriate operation number for throwing parcels. They were keeping them on office time, which was inflating our office times and inaccurately reflecting our hours. So again, whatever job you're doing, you have to be on the appropriate operation. Next, perform a vehicle inspection using Notice 76 Expanded Vehicle Safety Check. This is obviously something you're supposed to be doing every single day. These trucks are old, they're crappy, they're beat up, and it's worthwhile to do your vehicle check to make sure that everything is in working order. And if it's not in working order, then we get to our next one. Complete a sample PS Form 4565 Vehicle Repair Tag. So with these repair tags, in my experience, you don't have to be a mechanic to fill one out. You just kind of use your best description of what the problem is. And our LLVs in particular are so simple that the person from vehicle maintenance has seen this same problem 400 times in the last 2 weeks, and they'll be able to figure it out and fix it and diagnose it fairly quickly. But you have to do that vehicle repair tag so that they know, hey, I got to come look at this truck. And if you think it's going to need a specific part, then you should mention that in your repair tag, because when maintenance comes out to my station, they don't have every possible part with them. And so sometimes that can really delay repairs. Next, review label 70, safety check and vehicle dimensions. What is label 70? This is something that I use as a check to see if my trainee is actually paying attention to what they're signing. Because if they sign off on this, I ask them, just like I'm asking you, what is label 70, safety check and vehicle dimensions? Go ahead. Say it. Don't be shy. All right. So label 70 is when you're in the LLV, it's right by your right knee. It's a sticker that's near the door that tells you it's a basic version of the vehicle check. And it also tells you the truck's height, which I believe is 7'1". Next, locate the M41, City Carrier Duties and Responsibilities, and review Chapter 1, General Information, Section 11, Responsibilities of a Carrier. From memory, I think this is part of the M41 that tells you, like, you have to be on time and obey your supervisor and stuff like that. But where is the M41? Where can you find an M41? Well, they're certainly available online, and that's easy enough. You keep a copy right on your phone. But they're also supposed to be in the drawer or whatever, like the open cubby under your case ledge. Like you have the drawer that pulls out, and then there's an empty space. Oh, your route book. I'm sorry, it's supposed to be part of that binder that has your route information in it. So you should be able to find an M41 there at every case. Next, explain the layout of the post office as it relates to performance of carrier duties. So I feel like this question is poorly worded. First, because when I hear about carrier duties, I think about the restroom. But also, explain the layout of the post office as it relates to performance of carrier duties. What does that even mean? Well, it turns out I learned this from reading the M39, that the post office is supposed to be laid out in a way that you're going to naturally like make your way through the building and encounter the things you need to encounter on the way. So the parcel hampers are going to be in a centralized area. The markups are going to be like on your way out the door, stuff like that. Next, report of hazard, unsafe condition, or practice. So this is PS Form 1767. And if you have a safety concern, you want to bring it to your supervisor. And in theory, you and your supervisor are supposed to be on the same page with getting safety needs addressed. But if it doesn't get addressed, you can fill out this Form 1767. And the beautiful part of that form is it's in like quadruplicate. And one of the copies goes up to the district safety manager. And so you write what the problem is. And then underneath that, management has to write what they're doing about it. And they don't want to write on there that they're just ignoring the problem and then send it up to district safety. So that form does tend to get results. Next, demonstrate proper lifting procedures. So make sure you lift with your back. Don't do that. That's the opposite of what you're supposed to do. Make sure you lift with your legs, not with your back. Keep your back straight. Keep the weight in as close to as you can, things like that. Next, identify all components of the carrier case. And here's a list here. See if you know what each of them is. Shelving. What is shelving? Oh, it turns out it's the shelves. Cells. The little spaces where we put the mail, that's called a cell. Color pattern of labels. You know, once I've been casing for a while, I completely ignore the fact that each street has its own unique like color and pattern, and that's to help new people find the streets more easily, but I couldn't tell you what a single one is on my route. Next, UAA, UTF, CFS, hold mail, separations. This is down either in the lower right or the upper right. There's going to be a place there for you to put all your carrier-endorsed mail. UBAM separation. At my station, we have a red bucket that says UBAM on it, undeliverable bulk business mail, and it's kept at the edge of the case. Satchel hook. That's what those little hooks are underneath your case ledge. You're intended to hang your satchel there. Ink dauber. So you may see like a rubber pad bolted onto your case somewhere, and it has like these four stripes on it, and that is actually an ink pad that you're supposed to use if you find stamps that have not been canceled. And you press the stamp up against that, and that cancels the stamp. And then the last two things in here are the edit book and the route book. The route book gives you all the basic information about the route. It has your 1564A that tells you where your lunch stops are and basic stuff about the route. And then the edit book, also called the red book, is how you make changes to the route. Next, identify bundle system for the route. This is a throwback to a time when we used to case a lot more letters. And so we would use the one bundle, the modified two bundle, but now we just do the vertical flat casing, and so this isn't relevant anymore. Next, withdraw mail and stage for casing without obstructing aisle space while maintaining a clean work area. So when you're pulling your mail and getting it ready, you want to make sure that you're not like blocking the aisle, stuff like that. Next, properly case. Dude, am I already there? Yeah. Hold on. Yeah, I guess I am. Did I skip something? No, I didn't. All right, I'm sorry. Sorry, I got a little lost there. Okay, properly case route non-DPS FSS letters and flats. Trainee should experience no less than 2.5 hours of casing. So this is important because when you're new, you have to learn how to case properly. You got to make sure the mail goes in the right direction and that it's accurate. The problem is, at least where I work, a new hire may not case again for another 6 months. You know, usually they come in at, you know, like an hour and a half after the rest of a start. The mail is already prepared, and they don't get much opportunity to case after that. So during the training, you want to make sure that they get that full 2.5 hours of casing so they get as much practice as they can. But if you see a CCA or a new person at your station who's going to be casing on a route for the first time, pull them aside. Make sure that they're actually putting the mail in there properly, because it is a very good chance it's been a long time since they last cased. Next, check small parcels and rolls, spurs, for extra services and properly case. This right that we have to case our spurs is something that management will fight us on from time to time, and it is ensconced in multiple areas. It's in the M39, it's in the M41, I think it's even in the contract. I'm not positive about that off the top of my head, but it's also in this training checklist. Yes, we can case our spurs, and we're supposed to look for extra services like insured and things like that. Next, identify procedures for handling damaged, suspicious, and hazardous mail. So if your mail is damaged, my station, we take it to what we call the patch-up area, where we're able to like tape it closed or put it in a bag. We have these bags that say "We Care" on them. So if you have a letter or a flat, you can put it inside of one of those bags. And it's important to do this before it gets to the customer, because the customer is always going to assume that whoever touched it last is the person who damaged it. So this helps to cover you in the event that you run into some damaged mail. Also, with a parcel, if the parcel has obvious damage, then as soon as you get that parcel, you're going to want to scan it and mark it as visible damage. So if you're not sure how to do that, it's in your regular scan barcode screen. You scan the package, you press enter, and then you go to number 4, other, and then I believe it's number 5, visible damage. With suspicious mail, you want to take it to your supervisor and let them deal with it. And then with hazardous mail, you don't touch it at all. So that's pretty straightforward. Next, apply safe work practices from JSA casing mail. There are a few ways that you can hurt yourself while you're casing the mail. A big one is just repetitive stress. So you want to make sure you're standing in a comfortable position, not doing too much twisting, and maybe wear gloves to help protect your hands, stuff like that. Next, apply safe work practices from JSA elevating mail from the floor. Oh, by the way, a JSA is a job safety analysis. It's these forms that the post office comes up with that looks at a specific task that we do and figures out how to do that task safely. So one of those tasks that is used as an example in training is elevating mail from the floor. You have your mail in the floor, like in a bucket, and you're going to bring that mail up to your case ledge in order to work with it. So make sure you grab the bucket firmly, elevate it all the way up, put it on the case ledge, don't leave it hanging halfway off, stuff like that. It's pretty straightforward. Next, identify features and benefits of each class of mail. First, express mail. Obviously, the benefit of this is that it gets there faster. Next, first-class mail. First-class mail can't be destroyed, and first-class mail, it doesn't go into the UBM, and if first-class mail is undeliverable, it'll either get forwarded or returned as appropriate. And also, first-class mail doesn't get delayed. Next, priority mail. Priority mail gets anywhere in the country in typically 2 to 3 days. It's not guaranteed, but it's a pretty good product. It gets there fast. And the price is reasonable. Well, going back to Express Mail, Express Mail is also our only product that has a guaranteed delivery time. Next, number four, periodicals. So periodicals are magazines. They're things that come out on a periodical basis, like every month, every 2 months, something like that. And old-timers call that second-class mail. And that is a preferential mail class. It cannot go into the UBM. Also worth noting, periodicals are the only class of mail where you may not have the class actually indicated on the label. On a magazine that doesn't have a plastic cover around it, you're just going to have the address label. And it doesn't say periodicals on it. So you have to know, oh, this is a magazine. The postage information is actually somewhere on the inside. It's usually in the first couple or the last couple pages. But you're not going to go in there looking for it. You just know, oh, it looks like a magazine. It has one of these labels on it that's just the address label. And it cannot go into the UBM. Next, Standard Post is a type of package service. And that one has been replaced by Ground Advantage. Next, Standard Mail. This would be a catch-all for non-preferential mail. Standard, non-profit, marketing, bound, print, and matter. And this is stuff where the mailer has paid the bare minimum. Their mail does not get forwarded or returned if it's undeliverable. It just goes into UBM, undeliverable bulk business mail, unless it has an ancillary service endorsement, like forwarding service, return service, address service, stuff like that. Next, package services. This is kind of a catch-all just for parcels. Now, it seems like we're down to pretty much just two categories of parcels at the moment, Ground Advantage and Priority. I'm sure there's more. Like, obviously, there's still media mail. There's still bound printed matter. But most of what we see now is just Ground Advantage and Priority mail. Whoever came up with Ground Advantage, it is very popular with shippers. So thumbs up to whoever came up with that. Next, review the color coding policy. What is the color coding policy? Who calls it that? What is that? I'll give you a second to think about it. All right, so the color coding policy has two parts. The first part is the plastic blockers that go into your cells at your case. And there is actually standard definitions for what those colors are supposed to mean. And there's a chart. And on that chart, a blue blocker, like the L-shaped plastic bar that goes in there, indicates vacant. And the yellow one indicates hold. And I forget what the other ones mean because those are the only two that we generally use. But there are official definitions for those colors. If you use different colors for different things at your station, just stick with that because this is a fairly obscure part of postal policy. And it's better not to confuse people. Also, that little bar is L-shaped, and it's L-shaped because if you have a cell that has two addresses in it, if the address on the left is the one that's vacant, then you want to put the L in so that it looks like an L, so that the bar goes up the left side, indicating that the left side is vacant. If the right side address is vacant, then you're going to put it in the other way. It's like the opposite L. And that indicates that the one on the right side is vacant. And then if they're both vacant, then you turn it 90 degrees so that it's like flat across the top, and that blocks both sides of the cell. So that's one half of the color coding policy. The other half of the color coding policy is for when we delay mail. So we've talked about before that you are not authorized to delay the mail. Only management can delay the mail. If they do, you're going to fill out a 1571, and you leave that slip with the mail that got delayed. Well, a clerk can come around, file away those 1571s, and replace it with a color-coded placard. And the placard has very clear instructions on it that says, like, this mail came in on Monday, and it has to be delivered no later than Wednesday. And it'll be blue. And then if the mail got delayed on Wednesday, this mail was delayed on Wednesday, it has to be delivered no later than Friday, and it'll be orange. I actually don't know what the colors are off the top of my head. But that color lets a supervisor tell just at a glance that, oh, that mail has to go out today. Any purple mail has to go out today. And that's what that's for. And that's if you're at a fancy station. At a station like mine, we use strips of colored construction paper, but they serve the exact same purpose. So that's the color coding policy. Next, identify the locations where mailers can place an ancillary service endorsement. The ancillary service endorsement is like attempted not known, no such number, stuff like that. And it can be anywhere, it can be in a number of places on the envelope. And learning where those places are really helps to prevent a lot of mistakes when you're tossing stuff into the UBM, because you have to look for that ancillary service endorsement. It can be in the top right near the postage. It can be written across the top. It can be in the top left near the return address. If you have an envelope with a window where the address is in the window, it can be in the window. Ugh, that's the worst. That's a bad place for it. It could be right above where that window is. There's a bunch of places where you can see it. And then I think it's either Citibank or American Express will send out advertisements that have like this silvery paper, and it makes it almost impossible to see the ancillary service endorsement that's written in black. So this is the kind of stuff you have to look for. Next, locate or review the edit book for the route that the carrier is casing. Generally, you're not going to be dealing... The edit book is how you make changes to the route. It has the entire line of travel. It has information about each delivery point, and you can change notations on your case. You can change the line of travel for your for your route, but it's not something you're going to do as a new hire. One of these days, I will have an episode on the edit book, but it's a long way off. Like, number one, I'm not comfortable. Like, I can do my own edit book, but I don't know if I could teach it, especially without being able to look at an edit book. So, someday. Next, identify PS Form 1564A delivery instructions to determine the delivery method and type of route the carrier is casing. So this form that should be inside your route book will tell you basic stuff about your route. It tells you who the regular carrier is, who the carrier technician is, what your vehicle number is, what type of vehicle it is. If you have collection boxes, it tells you where those are. If you have relays, it says where those are. It also has your approved line of travel to get to and from the route. It tells you where you're supposed to take your breaks, where you're supposed to take your lunch. Everything like that is all on the 1564A. And then we have the 1564B, which is the next item, special orders for the route that the carrier is casing. And this one is essentially just a list. And it'll say things on it like, these people don't want you to walk across their lawn. Or this house has a dog, and so make sure you watch out. Or this business closes at 3 p.m., make sure you get there by that time. Stuff like that is on the 1564B. And you can also track forwards on there. Any active forwards that you have that you're still seeing mail for, you can put those on a 1564B as well. The problem with the 1564B is that it sits at the case. And so when you need that information, like, hey, these people don't want you to walk across their lawn, it's sitting there at the case. And so in Las Vegas, and I'm sure many places around the country, we use what are called special notice cards. And you case those up with your mail, and that way it tells you when you get to that address, hey, these people don't want you to walk across their lawn. Next, identify authorized lunch and break locations. That's going to be on that form 1564A, and it'll tell you where you're allowed to take your lunch, where you're allowed to take your breaks. Next, identify line of travel. This will also be on that 1564A, and it'll tell you the way you're supposed to go to and from the route. That is your line of travel, but the line of travel is also the route itself. So my line of travel has me go down Tropicana to Mountain Vista to Harmon to Annie Oakley to Meadow Glen Drive, and then I start delivery Meadow Glen Way to Meadow Glen Circle to Brookview back to Meadow Glen Drive. Then I drive down Annie Oakley, turn left, you know, all that stuff. That whole thing, that's the line of travel. Next, identify collection box times and locations. These will also be listed on the 1564A if you have collection boxes on your route. And we're making really good progress here. Next, accept ACCEPT, like you're going to take and process accountable mail, including at least one piece of certified mail, express mail, and registered mail. Certified mail is still considered an accountable item by the book. Well, actually, I'm not positive about that. But express mail and registered mail certainly are, and registered mail especially. Everybody who comes in contact with that registered mail is personally responsible for it while they have it. And this is the most secure way to send something. It requires a signature at every step of the way, like the employee who has it has to sign for it. They have to hand number that this is the register that I have. Then when they hand it off to the next person has it. If you ever have something that absolutely positively cannot get lost, that it is like super valuable and it's worth the extra money for that peace of mind, like you ever get that winning lottery ticket for $100,000 that you got to mail into the lottery division, send it registered mail, because that way there's no way it's going to get lost. Next, demonstrate proper handling of USPS tracking and signature confirmation mail. So we deal with this stuff every day, that you have to scan the item. If it requires a signature, you have to get the signature as well. Locate and obtain the scanner in accordance with local procedures. So now our scanners we need first thing in the morning, because we need them in order to clock in. If you well, at my station, the scanner is assigned to a route. So whoever's on route 2115 for the day, they get the scanner for 2115. I presume it's that way at most places, but I wouldn't be shocked if some places had a scanner assigned to a person instead of the route. In most instances, it's basically the same thing. But then if you're not assigned to a route that day, if you're a CCA or a PTF, how do you get your scanner? Well, you have to get with your supervisor and figure that out. Next, demonstrate how to properly set up and use the scanner. This is obviously something you're doing every day. Next, locate PS Form 3982, change of address for the route. Do you know, dear listener, what is a PS Form 3982 change of address and where you can find it? I'll give you a second to actually think about it. What is the 3982 change of address and where can you find it? If you said that it's the change of address card that the employees or that the customers fill out, you are mistaken. That is a 3575. The 3982 is the pink card where we record completed change of addresses, and those are on the left side of every case ledge or every shelf on the case. Next, it says process PS Form 3982 label, which is the sticker that goes onto the pink card. And process at least one PS Form 3575Z employee generated change of address. So this would be the move left no address. And I have a whole episode devoted to move left no address. In fact, a lot of this stuff has episodes devoted to it. But the move left no address is what enables us to use our PARS, the Postal Automated Redirection System, to automatically intercept mail for people who don't live there anymore and return it to sender. And that is an awesome system. You should absolutely use it. Next, process a piece of UAA mail that's undeliverable as addressed mail bearing an ancillary service endorsement. So, if it has an ancillary service endorsement, like return service, forwarding service, whatever, that means you cannot put it into the UBIM. It has to be either forwarded or returned as appropriate. And it does not matter to us as carriers what service they're asking for. If I have a piece of mail that's attempted not known and I'm going to return it to sender, even if it says forwarding service requested, it doesn't matter. I'm going to put it in attempted not known. If I have a piece of mail that has a good forward on it and the ancillary service says return service requested, I'm going to forward it just like I would do like if it were a piece of first-class mail. Everything that happens after that, as far as obliging that ancillary service, that's all handled somewhere else. You just do with it whatever you would normally do with it if it were preferential. Next, process a piece of return-to-sender mail requiring an individual carrier endorsement. And the next item in the list is one requiring a bundle carrier endorsement. So the difference between individual and bundled endorsements goes back to the time when we used to have to hand write the reason for non-delivery on each piece of mail. And an individually endorsed piece, like deceased, you have to write deceased on every single piece of mail. Whereas a bundled endorsement, like attempted not known, you could put ANK just on the top piece rubber band the whole thing together, and they're all attempted not known. Now, at my station, and I presume most of the country is like this, we have the carrier-endorsed rack that just has trays and buckets, and if you have a piece of attempted not known, you put it in the tray that says attempted not known. So that's how those are processed now. Next, process a piece of endorsed and unendorsed undeliverable bulk business mail. The endorsement I believe it's referring to here is the ancillary service endorsement. So if it has an ancillary service endorsement, then you cannot put it into the UBAM. It has to be treated essentially like first class. It's going to be either forwarded or returned as appropriate. Next, locate the throwback case and identify the different separations. So the throwback case is where you take mail, like when you're casing, that's not for your route. You take it to the centralized area, the throwback case, and you're going to put it in the appropriate separation. There are small cubbies in the throwback case for letters, and there are big cubbies in the throwback case for flats. And then they're going to be labeled. There's a fairly standard set of labels, but they may be labeled for what's needed at your station. Like my station has, for the letters, they have first class, and then they have third class, which are old-time words for preferential and non-preferential. So if you have a piece of first-class mail, you're going to put it in the preferential slot. If you have a piece of standard mail, you're going to put it in the non-preferential slot. And the reason that's done is because all of that stuff that's in the first class or the preferential mail has to go out today. It's not supposed to be delayed. So if your clerks are running behind schedule, they're going to go and grab all that preferential mail first and make sure that all gets distributed. And if they don't get to the non-preferential stuff, it's not that big of a deal. And then you'll have similar separations in your flats. You're going to have preferential flats, non-preferential flats. And they're separated for the same reason. And then we also have additional separations for mail that's going to the PO boxes because the box clerk needs to be able to come over and just grab that mail, go back to the box section. And we have another separation called loop mail, which is for mail that your scheme clerk cannot redistribute within the station because it goes outside your station. You get a piece of mail that's going to Hawaii, your clerk, unless you work in Hawaii, your clerk is not going to be able to redistribute that piece of mail. So that goes into loop, and it's going to have to get hand processed to go wherever it goes outside the station. Next, locate and obtain parcel hamper. It's pretty straightforward. Those are usually easy to find. Next, handle caseable small parcels and rolls, spurs, and extra services parcels. So once again, this reiterates that yes, we absolutely do handle that stuff in the office. It is okay to touch your parcels while you're in the station. How else are you supposed to find those extra services? Next, complete a PS Form 3996 carrier auxiliary control. So this is if you're going to need overtime for the day, if you're not going to be able to complete your route in 8 hours. And again, I have an entire episode devoted just to the 3996. Complete a PS Form 1571 undelivered mail report. I have a whole episode devoted to this. This is if mail winds up being delayed, remember you're not authorized to delay the mail. So you fill out this form, you give it to management, and management signs off on it. And then that form stays with the mail until it finally gets prepared for delivery. Next, pull down and process undeliverable mail, including hold mail, CFS mail, which is forwarded mail, and UBAM. And so you need to make sure at the end of your casing that all that stuff winds up in its appropriate home. You don't want to leave stuff behind just sitting in your case. Next, practice pull down procedures for different types of delivery. So depending on what type of delivery you're doing, your pull down is going to be different, like the way you strap out your mail. If you are doing park and loop, each loop is probably going to go into its own rubber band. If you're doing apartment delivery, then you may put that whole apartment complex into a bucket. And if you're doing, say, out the window delivery, maybe you don't strap out anything because you deliver it all just one house at a time anyway. So these are all things that, you know, depending on what kind of route you're doing, it's going to be different. Next, load equipment such as the satchel or hamper. So all that stuff that you've now organized goes into the hamper. And if you have a park and loop or a walkout route, then the first set of deliveries, actually, I'm not sure if that's true for a walkout, but for park and loop, for sure, your first loop is supposed to go straight into your satchel. Check for sleepers. Off the top of your head, do you know what a sleeper is? It's anybody who's listened to this episode this far in. No, well, hopefully that's not true. A sleeper is a piece of mail that accidentally gets left behind. So it's easy to do with like postcards. They wind up sticking to the cell dividers. You get a letter that gets like pushed to the back of the case, something like that. So you want to check for that before you leave. Next, identify and replenish forms and equipment that are required when delivering the mail. So some of the forms you might need are 3849s, your left notice slips. You might need notices for packages. Who knows what papers you'd bring out there. Change of address cards. And then equipment would be like rubber bands and the various other little things that you need with you. Pens. Next, pull mail from hotcase and scan hotcase barcode. So on your way out the door, you're going to check that hotcase one last time, and you're going to check that, or you're going to scan that barcode to prove that, yes, you checked it the one last time. Next, locate and withdraw DPS mail and riffle to ensure that it is in proper delivery order. So now you're on street time. You're going to grab that DPS. You're going to make sure it's all for your route, and then out you go. Next, locate and withdraw FSS mail, if applicable. I don't think anywhere has FSS anymore. That's flat sort sequence. It's like DPS, but for flats. And as far as I know, that's all been discontinued. Next, clock over to street time. So this is a little bit out of order because the DPS should have already been done on street time. And probably that final pull from the hotkey should be done on street time also. Moving on. Organized mail in vehicle for accurate and efficient delivery using last in, first out, LIFO. So when you're loading your truck, the things that you won't need until the very end of the day, you're going to put those in like the far off, inconvenient corner of your truck. The things you're going to need right away, you want at the most convenient location. It's fairly obvious. Arrange and secure mail in the vehicle to provide safe driving conditions. So make sure that when you turn or when you hit the brakes, you're not going to have mail flying all over you. Next, scan the required office barcodes prior to leaving the route. If on a motorized route, enter the vehicle number and mileage after scanning the depart to route barcode. So that's it. You hit that on your way out the door. Put in your beginning vehicle mileage. Practice defensive driving while traveling to the route and obey all traffic laws. Remember, guys, we're not exempted from any traffic laws, including parking. Next, apply safe work practices, JSA transporting mail to and loading vehicles. So there's a job safety analysis that's just about like pushing your hamper out to your truck and how you're supposed to do that safely. Next, identify different types of mail receptacles. So this would be cluster boxes, centralized boxes like in an apartment complex, curbside boxes, and door slots and like house mounted boxes. And then next is identify the different types of delivery and delivery routes. And generally the box itself is what's going to define what type of delivery it is. If the mailboxes are all the way up at the house, generally that's going to be park and loop. If the mailboxes are on the other side of the sidewalk, then that's going to be sidewalk delivery or what we call stop and hop or over the curb. If the mailboxes are all the way out to the street, that's going to be curbside delivery, also known as out the window. And then if there are no mailboxes at the houses, then it's centralized delivery like cluster boxes or wall boxes, something like that. Next, review safe work practices for JSA dog attacks. Yes, of course, there is a job safety analysis about dog attacks. And one of these days, I'm going to have an episode devoted just to dog attacks. Guys, I have been attacked by dogs so many times, but I've never been bit. Next, secure mail equipment and vehicle when delivering the mail. So in the, I don't know if it's in the M41, but it's definitely somewhere that when you're doing park and loop or when you're doing centralized delivery and you're going to be away from the truck, you're not supposed to leave the mail up in the front in the cabin area. It's all supposed to be locked up in the back and you close that sliding door. I don't know how many people actually abide by that, but those are the rules. Next, prepare mail for delivery and verify address by fingering the mail. Yeah. All right, so obviously this is the main part of our job. Make sure that the correct mail goes into the correct box. Look at the address, make sure the address matches. Next, deliver the mail. I got to sign off on that one. Scan designated scan points on the route. We don't really have those anymore. We don't have street managed service points, but we do still have barcodes at collection boxes, if you have any of those. apply procedures for prepaid acceptance items. So somebody gives you a package going out, you have to make sure in your scanner you go to option H, prepaid acceptance, and scan that in right when you get them. The only one you're not going to scan in immediately is express mail. And this may be a local instruction, but this is the way I always taught it. As soon as you scan in that express mail, it creates a guarantee for when that item is going to arrive at its destination. And the problem is, if you don't get back to the station till like 7 o'clock at night, the truck that was supposed to take that to the plant is long gone. And so it's not going to make it to the plant, it's not going to make it to the airport, and it's not going to get to its destination in time. So we've always been instructed not to scan that express mail as accepted until it actually gets into the mail stream. Next, apply safe work practices for JSA carrier walker delivery. So there is a job safety analysis for how you're supposed to walk on the route. The next one is for mounted delivery. There's a job safety analysis for that as well. We're nearing the end here. Identify three key types of accountable mail. So go ahead and in your head, try to name three different types of mail that you might get from the accountables cage or the accountables clerk. Do you have them? Maybe you only have two of them. So some of the easier ones are express mail and registered mail. Those have already been talked about, but you could also have COD or postage due. Any of those might be considered accountable mail. And then certified, apparently those aren't accountable anymore. I don't know. Next, explain how to provide security to mail, money, and equipment trusted to your care. So this, you know, it's kind of intuitive or common sense stuff, like make sure you keep your truck locked up. Next, deliver and scan three types of accountable mail, including certified mail, express mail, and registered mail. I haven't delivered registered mail in quite some time. But when I do, I always keep it in the front of my mind that, like, I am personally responsible for this item, and I better make sure I know where it is all the time. When I have an on-the-job trainee, I make them sign for that registered mail, and then I'll quiz them every once in a while, like, hey, where's that registered mail? And they better know exactly where it is. Next, apply local check acceptance policy when accepting checks for customs duty, CODs, and postage due items. I cannot tell you the last time I had somebody try to write a check to pay for stuff out on the route. If they tried to, I would have no idea what the check acceptance policy is, and I'd have to call my supervisor. And interestingly, the last time this happened was like maybe 8 years ago, and I called my supervisor, and they didn't know the check acceptance policy either because it comes up so rarely. So they had to look it up. Next, apply procedures for accountable items for which delivery was attempted but not delivered. So if you had, say, an express mail that needed a signature, you tried to deliver it, there was no signature, what do you do next? Well, you're going to put left notice on the mail piece, bring it back to the station, and you're also going to fill out a 3849 and put that in the mail receptacle. Next, give three examples of established postal products and services. I don't really understand the point of these questions and the 102 skills, but okay. Three examples of postal products and services, express mail, ground advantage, and first class. There you go. Nailed it. Next, give an example of how the postal service is marketing new postal products in your community. Dude, I have no idea. What are we doing for advertising? The last advertising campaign that I remember distinctly was Lance Armstrong and the U.S. Postal Service Tour de France team. Since then, I couldn't tell you. I know we have commercials, and I've seen commercials every now and again, but that's about it. Next, identify five key questions in a Customer Connect card and complete and submit a Customer Connect card if applicable. So this is how we submit sales leads to the salespeople at the post office. And now you can actually do a Customer Connect lead right from your scanner. Next, collect outgoing mail from various types of collection points while delivering the mail. So you're going to get it from mailboxes, you're going to get it from CBUs, you're going to get it from businesses, and you get it like directly from customers. They hand it to you, stop you on the street. Hey, can you take this mail? Yeah, I'll take it. But you got to get out of the car. I ain't getting out of the car. You come to me. Next, collect mail on a collection route and adhere to collection schedules. So unless you have a collection route, this is not something you're going to do, but it is important to note that if you have one of those blue collection boxes, there's a time printed on it that says, it tells the customer, like if it says 2 p.m., it lets the customer know that as long as they get their mail in there by 2 p.m., it's going to go out today. And so we have to make sure we pick up the mail after the time indicated on the collection box. you know, if we were to pick that up at 1 p.m., they drop their mail in at 1:45. Now, it's not going to go out today because we already picked it up. So make sure you pick up after the time indicated on the collection box. Next, identify and isolate anonymous mail. Anonymous mail is mail that might be a bomb. And it's called anonymous mail because it doesn't have any way to firmly tie it to the sender. So what we're looking for with anonymous mail is two things. First of all, it only has stamps. It doesn't have a postage meter. It doesn't have a barcode. Both of those things, like to do a postage meter, you have to have an account with the post office, or you had to come into the post office. And so we have a way to figure out like who this came from. So that's the anonymous part. And then the other half of it is if it's 10 ounces or heavier. I guess somebody, you had to decide on a threshold somewhere. And so they set it at 10 ounces. So if it only has stamps and it's 10 ounces or more, then first of all, you don't want to accept it. If a customer tries to give it to you, if at all possible, don't take it. Give it back to them. And if you wind up accepting mail like that, then you're going to want to isolate it and bring it back to the station and give it to somebody like your supervisor, somebody who will declare it safe before it moves on. Usually it's going to wind up with these stickers on it that say, don't put this on an airplane. Because on the off chance that it is a bomb, we don't want it to be on an airplane, take down the plane. If it blows up in the back of a tractor trailer, that's not nearly as bad. I'm sure it's still bad, but not as bad. Next, locate and read standard operating procedures in your unit for dealing with hazardous materials. This one's really easy. Hazardous materials, you don't mess with them. Next, apply safe work practices for JSA collecting mail from collection boxes. There is a job safety analysis for this. It's possible to get hurt collecting mail from collection boxes, like this big heavy door. You know, when you open it, it falls down and hits you in the shin. That reminds me of a funny moment in the Carrier Academy. I was teaching, we had a larger class, so we had two instructors, and the other instructor was demonstrating getting mail out of the collection box, and he was talking about ways that he's hurt himself doing this. Like one time I had my head in here and I was just rushing and I picked my head up and I hit the door frame because I was rushing. Another time I put the door down and the door hit me in the leg because I was rushing. And one of the students asked, have you ever gotten like stuck inside of a collection box where like your head is inside the collection box and you're just stuck? And I start laughing and I go, no, he never has. But one time his stepsister got stuck like that. Ah, good times. All right. So anyway, that's collection boxes. Next, return the vehicle to the designated location and ensure that it is properly secured. So once you're done for the day, you're going to bring that truck back and it's got to be completely locked up, including rolling the windows all the way up. Scan return to office barcode if applicable. So you're going to hit that return to office. You're going to put in your vehicle's ending mileage for the day. Accurately record time and vehicle mileage information. So again, in your scanner, it's going to ask you for your vehicle's ending mileage. And man, we are almost at the end. Deposit collection mail and return equipment to designated locations. So your hamper goes back where the hampers go. If you use a U-cart, you put that back where those go. Your outgoing mail that you've collected, it all gets divided according to what the separations are where you work. Next, return scanner to cradle. This one is out of order because now you can't do that until the very end of the day once you clock out. Next, complete PS Form 3821 clearing receipt for clearing of accountable items. So in my opinion, this is kind of redundant. There is a little paper receipt that you can get when you turn your accountables in, and it shows that, yes, you turned them in, and here's the receipt that says they got everything back. But as long as the clearance clerk signed off on the form you signed in the morning, you're clear just the same. So I don't really see a point to getting that 3821, but you can ask for it. Next, perform administrative duties as required, including completion of PS Forms 3996, 1571, and 4565. So off the top of your head, what is a 3996? Go ahead. You could say it. It's the Carrier Auxiliary Control Form. I thought I heard you say that. And that's what you need to fill out if you either used overtime today or if you completed auxiliary assistance on another route. 1571, what form is that? That is the, go ahead, you could say it. It's all right, don't be shy. Nobody's watching you. It is the undelivered mail report, where if mail got delayed, you have to fill that out. And then finally, what's the 4565? That is the vehicle repair tag. All right. Next, and I want to mention that the 3996, you may have to fill one of these out at the end of the day, because anytime you go into overtime, you have to have a 3996 to go with it. So if you thought you were going to have an 8-hour day and things ran long, you inform your supervisor, hey, looks like I'm going to need a half hour of overtime. And they say, okay, go ahead and finish your route. When you get back, you should be filling out a 3996 that explains in box J why you went into overtime, and you submit that to your supervisor. Next, identify and process miscased mail. So you may have cased up some of your mail wrong. If it's for later in your route, then you're just going to set it aside, deliver it when you get there. If it's for earlier in your route, you're going to bring it back and either take it to the throwback case, or you're going to case it up to try again tomorrow. Next, identify and process previously misdelivered mail picked up on the route. Boy, if you're on my route, this is definitely going to happen. I make mistakes, you know, just like anybody, maybe more than a lot of people, and I put the wrong mail in the wrong box, especially because I have like four streets that all end in Crest, and they all have the same house numbers, like Meadowcrest and Mount Crest, and they have the same house numbers. My route starts out with Meadow Glen Way, Meadow Glen Circle. They have the same house numbers. And so if I'm not paying attention, it's very easy to make missed deliveries. So I want my customers to feel comfortable giving those missed deliveries back to me. So whenever they do, I always say, oh my God, thank you so much. Thank you for catching this. I'm going to make sure it gets to the right place. Next, locate the 3M case and identify the different separations. So 3M is for your DPS errors. You got mail in your DPS that was either not for you, or it was for you, but it was in the wrong sequence. So the three types are missequence mail, where it is for your route, it's just in the wrong sequence. Missort mail, where it does go to your station, it's just not for your route. And then missent mail is when it went to the completely wrong station. And those are the three separations in the 3M case. Next, place missent, missorted, and missequenced automated mail in the proper separation of the 3M case. So that's what we just talked about. Next, process other undeliverable mail. This is where you're going to drop off all your undeliverable mail for the day, the attempted not knowns, no such number, stuff like that. And oh, here's the very last ones. Case afternoon mail, if applicable. So maybe some mail got delayed in the morning and they're going to let you case it now. Or maybe you're in one of those offices that does expedited preferential mail, and you save your non-preferential mail to case in the afternoon. Next, check the schedule prior to clocking out. This is super important if you are a CCA or a PTF who doesn't have a fixed schedule. There is a weekly schedule, and the weekly schedule is your schedule, but it's subject to change every day. So you need to check it before you leave for the day to see, like, okay, what am I working tomorrow, or what changes have been made to the schedule. Whatever it is, when you leave for the day, I recommend you take a picture of it. That's your schedule, and that's what holds until you are notified otherwise. So if management calls you and say, oh, it turns out we don't need you tomorrow, or it turns out we do need you tomorrow, you have to obey their instructions, which is why you shouldn't answer your phone. That's a whole other topic. But anyway, check that schedule before you leave, because you are responsible for noticing any changes to your schedule. And then finally, clock out after all duties are complete. And that's it. That is all 102 items from the carrier on the job training booklet. So, did you know all that stuff? I bet there's a few things in there that you needed refreshing on. I know we all do, and that's the whole point of this podcast. All right, that task is now behind us. Thank you guys for listening, and I will catch you next time.